This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Hello. Good afternoon. We are 8 days from the Stanley Cup playoffs. Yeah, that one sink in. I just started the episode with a real truth bomb. And another real truth bomb is that I'm sitting here on, for I think the first time in my podcast experience, on the other side of the glass. You get a whole new perspective.
It's funky.
It is funky, but I like it. We need a little bit of funky 8 days before the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm with James Burley and Lou Orlando, a true trio of hockey knowledge. Guys, a lot has happened in the last week, and yeah, no, everything has happened. I mean, the playoff race has finally cleared up. Alex Ovechkin did the Alex Ovechkin thing, and now here we sit with a pretty good idea of who's playing who in the first round. Lou Orlando, how are you taking all this in, man?
I mean, listen, it's first off, it's been a while since I've been on 5-on-3. It feels like an eternity, but, you know, as the existential dread of my Fordham career ending and then college going by the wayside, have to get some of these sweet memories in one last time, so to get to do it alongside you fellas, this is great. Man, it's a weird feeling to know going into the Stanley Cup playoffs, my team's probably not going to be there. We have a 0.3% chance of making it right now. So I think that would mean a less stressful watching experience, but it's going to be odd for sure. You know, we'll see. I think it's a solid field of candidates. I can't say that my team deserves to be there, so I'm not going to complain.
As you say, tonight controls the Rangers and the Islanders' destiny. If Montreal just gets 1 point against
Ottawa,
that's all they need, and it's game over. James Burley, you're in a very different state of mind,
yeah.
I think, going into this playoffs. Because, yes, your team is in the playoffs, but certainly not playing the kind of hockey you hoped they would,
yeah,
coming into the final stretch.
Different, but still same. You know, and wise man once said, different, but still same. And in many ways, my personal experience, probably similar to what you guys are going through, long year, ready to get done with it, but not ready to say goodbye to Fordham in college. I mean, got a few seniors now, a little couple veterans, if you will, trying to piece together our brain to talk about some hockey. And it's a beautiful thing, but it is, as they say, bittersweet, Nick.
We'll do our best. We are rubbing our two collective brain cells that we share amongst the three of us together here. James, you are in a very different position, though, hockey-wise,
yes.
Because the Devils are making the playoffs, and it's decided that they're going to play against the Carolina Hurricanes. I guess we can start here, if we want to, on the best note of the Metro, of the Tri-State Metro teams, which are the Devils. They play Pittsburgh tonight at 7 p.m. Carolina made a big move, though, which could have serious implications on this series and could seriously affect the odds, James.
Well, you know what? As far as it goes, I'm going to go ahead and say that no move at this point, and it still feels like the Devils are up against it. Not to start off entirely negatively, considering, you know, Carolina's not been fantastic as of late. Lost to the Bruins 5-1 last Saturday. Lost to the Sabres 3-0 on Tuesday, the same day the Devils got a reality check from the Bruins. Lost 7-2. But that was enough to put them in the conversation. The next day, they find out with the way the points go between Philly and New York that the Devils do, in fact, sneak into the playoffs. They've clinched. It would have taken a disaster of epic proportions for this Devils team not to have made the playoffs,
yeah,
considering just about how every wild card pushing team and every team in the Metropolitan Division really just, you know, didn't really want it, it seems, at least not bad enough. And the one good thing I will say about New Jersey right now is that they've been able to piece together some semblance of consistency and playoff enough hockey, playoff adjacent hockey even, by bringing in the likes of younger players. You know, no Jack Hughes, no Dougie Hamilton,
yep,
no Jonas Siegenthaler, and they've still been able to play decently enough to this point. Not great, but not terrible. good enough for the playoffs. But I think this Carolina team is going to be licking their chops no matter what with this Devils first round. And I know you guys are a little bit confused maybe, but based on the looks you're giving me.
Someone walked into the studio behind you. That has nothing to do with what you... I agree wholeheartedly with everything that you're saying.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, the Devils have made me proud enough that they've been able to sort it all out. But I do think this says more about the rest of the division than it does about New Jersey. They've got the pieces that might suggest, you know, they could pull off something, but I don't see this series going past six games, and I don't see New Jersey threatening the Carolina Hurricanes all that much. I think this Hurricanes team has been around in the playoffs consistently. While the Devils are a playoff team, they're good enough to be here. They were here 2 years ago. I think there's just too much on the other side of the ice. I don't care who they just brought in this past week. Or however they've done it. The Devils...
You don't like Nikishin?
It's not that I don't like him. It's that I don't like the Devils to win this series regardless. And even if there's a healthy Jack Hughes, healthy Dougie Hamilton, healthy Jonas Siegenthaler, which those last two were at Morning Skate the past few days, it seems as though that they could be gearing up for a playoff return. I'm not super convinced by this Devils team, even when those guys were healthy. But with that said, this feels a little bit similar to where they were 2 years ago. They're not playing nearly as good hockey, didn't win nearly as many games or score as many points, but they are playing with a bit of house money because of those names that I mentioned. Jack Hughes is not there. That's the biggest excuse you have on the planet.
Yeah.
One excuse that they had the past couple years that they no longer have was goaltending. Not only has Jacob Markstrom been great for most of this year, he was awful against Boston.
How about Allen?
Jake Allen has been phenomenal. He's the best goalie in the league across his last 20 games. If you just look at, I have the Money Puck stats up here. He's top 9 in the league among goalies who have played at least 25 games and goals saved above expected. Goals saved above expected per 60, he stands alone at number 1.
How about it?
He has statistically been among the best goaltenders in the NHL. And, I mean, I think there's a real question of whether or not he deserves to be more important. I mean, Markstrom's the number 1 guy. He should be the starter in the playoffs. I don't want to take away from that. That's his expectation. But for me, I mean, Jake Allen, this is a guy who's going to play on a different hockey team in a year. And that really stinks because he's been that good when Markstrom was out. He's been good enough to play himself into a starter's conversation in most teams in the National Hockey League, if not for the fact that the Devils had a different guy named Jake who plays goalie. So, I mean, I've loved that. That's not an excuse.
Yeah.
And then you've gotten the production from the guys that you hoped it would. I mean, March Madness, Meyer Madness is a real thing. In his last 20 games, he's got 12 points, 10 goals, 2 assists. I mean, he's been great. He was one of the only players who looked threatening against the Boston Bruins. If I could add, Jesper Bratt has been 88 points this year. He's been phenomenal. An actual, you know, top 10, top 15 scorer in the National Hockey League. And then for me, Nico Hischier is the front runner for the Selkie. Not only is he legitimately that good on both ends of the ice, but, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to point around any team in the National Hockey League and say, this player is more integral to his team's success than Nico Hischier is to the New Jersey Devils' success. I think he's, you know, amongst a group of 5, 6, maybe 7 players in the league who you can point to and be, this guy is that important for their team. So there are some good things. Mm. And there are some things that might suggest they can sneak out some wins here. But Carolina, I mean, even when they've been bad, like if I look at their last 10 games, I mean, they're 4-5-1. But if I look at their last 15 games before that, they were at 8-1-1 at one point. They've been putting it together for bigger stretches than this Devils team. Still streaky. Mm. Most teams in the Metropolitan Division are. They took Washington to the shootout last night. They didn't win. But I still think this Hurricanes team is going to be a little bit too powerful.
I've got a playoff question for both of you then as it relates to the Devils. Because I asked Tucker Austin, our other Devils beat reporter, this question. He gave me an interesting answer. So, we were just talking about Markstrom and Allen both playing in elite manners. I asked Tucker, I said, hey, obviously Marky's your starter.
Mm-hmm.
How many bad performances does he need to put up for you to put Jake Allen in the starter's role? And what Tucker told me was he said, I'm going to need 2 duds in a row from Markstrom, and then I'll give Allen the third game.
I was thinking at least 2.
I think, you know, there's some precedent to that. I mean, Sheldon Keefe wasn't the coach 2 years ago, but We saw a couple of really bad performances at home from Vitek Vanacek in round one of the Devils' playoff series against the New York Rangers. They made a goaltending change, and, I mean, they never looked back. That changed everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Akira Schmid, in some ways, won that series for the Devils. Absolutely. It's on the goaltending he displayed.
And I think I'd be a little bit more confident in going from Jacob Markstrom to Jake Allen than I was 2 years ago going from Vanacek to Schmid. So I think that the Devils can't look and say, like, if there are two bad games and Markstrom is at fault, they will change to Jake Allen. And they should be confident in doing that. And I don't think that changes the ethos or the expectations of the players in front of him, because they know they're going to get good goaltending, or they should get good goaltending, regardless of who it is.
I wouldn't overreact to one bad game. I think anyone can have one bad game, especially in the playoffs. And I think there's enough of a resume on Markstrom, what he's done in Calgary, what he did in Calgary. I think even what he's done at some points this season, when you think back to first half of the season, I thought maybe, I think it was around November, December, I was like, you know, he's really rewarding the Devils for going out, making that trade, getting aggressive, and finally getting the big-name goaltender that we all kind of thought they had been missing for a few years. That I think it's two games. You have two bad games in a row. It's a seven-game series. You're fighting for your life. You can't just go and give him all seven games and say, hey, figure it out. Like, you got to try and win a series. And you have a backup in Jake Allen that has been the better goalie of late.
Yeah.
And so that should give you confidence in going to that move. Like, I think back to the Boston-Florida series, when Boston was the greatest one seed of all time. Right? A lot of people said they switched goalies too late, that they put... Right, they went to Swayman for game seven, but it ended Ullmark 1-6, and it's like, well, now everyone's in a bad situation. Ullmark's really struggled for a long time, and you're throwing Swayman into the deep end in game seven.
Right.
That's not the situation you want to put either of your goaltenders in. So, like, yes, there's some sense of, if it gets bad quick, swift action, let's get the other guy in there. But, again, there's enough of a resume on the hockey card of Markstrom that It's got to be two games, especially because I think in this series, like, one of the things that you're getting at is, like, there's a malaise over the East that is, like, outside of a couple teams that you maybe have confidence in. It's something we can get into. Like, who do you feel really good in the East right now? I think Washington, and then it's like, oh, I trust Florida implicitly because of what they've done, but, like, you know, and Toronto's still got a stench on them, even though they've been phenomenal this year.
And I think you can grant the same sort of, because they've been here, olive branch to Tampa.
Yes.
And Tampa have kind of adapted more to their game this season than they did last year.
Yeah.
But, like, especially
in the post-Stamkos era.
In this matchup, like, I think the story is it's two teams that are trending in the wrong direction. Like, the Devils and the Hurricanes, they're not playing the hockey that you would like to see them play a week away from the playoffs starting.
No, you would not.
To me, this is the least confident I've been in a Hurricanes team in a while. And ironically enough, I think it's probably the best goaltending that they've had going into a postseason in any of the years that they were poised to make deep runs. They're firmly in the top 10 in goaltender metrics right now. But it's still, like, part of me still wonders, like, can that turn into a pumpkin come postseason time?
Right.
I feel like that's always the big thing people talk about with the Hurricanes, at least in past playoff appearances, was do they have the goaltending to get themselves all the way to a Stanley Cup final? I think they really fumbled that whole Natchez Rantanen situation. Wouldn't it be awesome to have one of them going in?
Like, wouldn't it?
Either have Natchez or have Rantanen. It's kind of unbelievable that they had both of them at one point this season, and they're going to go into the playoffs without either of them. And that's tough, man. I'm going to have to eat my crow. I feel like this is the least excited and the least anticipation I've had with the Hurricanes going into a postseason run, and maybe that's exactly what they want. I feel, wow. I'm always very hesitant with them. They're always funky.
You got to watch them like the Lightning. You always got to watch the Lightning as well.
I'll take it one step further. I think this is the least anticipated, and I'm saying this as a diehard fan of one of the teams participating in it, but I think this is the least exciting first-round series, and I think it is by a long shot. Not only, and it shouldn't be, because these are two rivals. Devils and Hurricanes, like, not only from the past couple seasons have they been, you know, jostling for, like, who is towards the top of the Metropolitan, Like, this is a historic playoff rivalry. Going back to 2006, Devils Hurricanes, great series. 2009, blowing Game 7, two goals in the last minute to let Carolina beat the Devils in Game 7. Like, there's history on the line here, too. Like, Devils fans, like, you'll hear diehard Devils fans who follow the team very closely. The team they hate the most is the Rangers. Mm-hmm. But the playoff bogey is always the Hurricanes. We've had some success against the playoffs and the Rangers, at least in most recent terms. Against the Hurricanes, almost never. Devils fans are hungry for a playoff victory over the Hurricanes, but very few Devils fans really feel like they can do it this time around. And that's even with some of the things we've said about this Hurricanes team. Not set up as beautifully as they would have been in the past. The Devils are without some big players, but I mean, I don't think that the confidence is booming out of New Jersey right now.
No, it's the least exciting matchup, certainly in the East, and Montreal sneaking in, that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah,
and Ottawa being the wild, like the two wild card teams, are interesting.
They've had to be good this point, in the way that all the other teams they were competing for weren't. I think that they're playing with some good momentum that neither New Jersey nor Carolina will have.
So like. Any Canadian matchup in the playoffs is going to be exciting. So Toronto, Ottawa, like that's going to be
the Battle of Ontario,
really, really, really fun. And then Ovi in the playoffs with Washington playing a young Montreal team, like that's exciting. And that's got anytime you get something new that you haven't seen in a while. And then even though maybe you can make a case Panthers Lightning is tired, but to me, like anytime you get a battle of Florida, again the geographic stuff we're talking about, like that. That really drives up the excitement as well, and it's the reigning Stanley Cup champions. Like, I'm not surprised that this is the runt of the litter, certainly in the East. Mm-hmm. I think you can make a case that maybe one or two matchups on the West, we can dive into it. But, I don't know, to me, it feels like it's a Carolina team that has been here a lot, and there's not a lot of confidence that they're going in the right direction in terms of making a Stanley Cup final. I think if you have 100% confidence that Hughes is playing, all right, maybe that's a different story for the Devils. But again, the Devils are going in the wrong direction as well. Where, like, that's a huge part of it. Like, a fully healthy Devils team that has fully completed the turnaround of, like, hey, last year was a disaster. We're back now and we're firing on all cylinders. That would have been appointment television. That's not them right now. That's not the vibes around this team right now.
No.
No, but the vibes sure are good. And you mentioned it around Montreal. Right now, I mean, this is a team that is winning at the right time, and they have a young, scary lineup. I mean, you just look at these lines, and I'd like to play this game.
Please, let's play games.
Caulfield, Suzuki, Slafkovsky. Is it a top five line in hockey? Oh,
there's a lot of good lines in hockey. I would say no.
I can pull up MoneyPuck and get you a definitive answer on that. Objective answer. Let's see. I'll tell you what, though. If it's not right now, it certainly will be in the future. And that's kind of where I'm like, if I'm Montreal, I'm loving where I'm at right now. You know, they could get swept first round and the season would still be a success.
Yep.
And that's kind of why I'm almost bullish about New Jersey a little bit, because like no one's expecting them to go past the first round now at this point. They got a little bit of house money to play with. That could be good. But more so for the Ottawas in Montreal, who have been great in this last stretch of the season. I don't think a lot of people thought Montreal would be this close to a playoff position. They've won six in a row now.
Yep.
And they're not it would take a disaster never before seen in the NHL for them not to be a playoff team at this point.
They could lose tonight and be a playoff team.
Yes, they could. And I think that's a good place to be in. It's a place you want to be in. Let's see if I can find these lines. Hold on.
Well, I mean, I'll say like it's not Robertson, Hintz, Rantanen.
No.
It's not Gensel, Point, Kucherov. But I would agree that they're, you know, top 10, they're going to be in the discussion. And that's part of the appeal of Montreal getting this early playoff appearance, is I think the general consensus is they're, if they make the playoffs, and they're going to, if they don't make the playoffs, that's a travesty.
Yeah.
And that will mean that they lost out and the Rangers or the Islanders won out. Not going to happen.
Right.
Being a year ahead of schedule with the youth that you have on this team, the rising talent that you have on this team, the phrase playing with house money gets thrown around, I think, too frequently. Mm-hmm. What you'll learn a lot, and I think you see with a lot of the local teams, is that you only get so many kicks at the can in terms of getting to the postseason and having a chance, and you can't take them for granted. But getting that young core playoff experience, and it should be the first of many playoff appearances for this very young, very talented core, it's important, especially in hockey, where it maybe more than any other sport, that veteran experience is still really, really valued, and teams look for players that have been in the postseason and know that style of play because it changes so much, right? Like, and obviously, right, Montreal has a couple of those players, but to give that young core, the Suzuki, the Caulfields, the Slavkovskis, to give them that early experience, even if they lose in five games, but you just get a taste of like, hey, man, that's what it takes to be. You want to win a series in playoff hockey? That's what it takes. That's valuable.
Every Stanley Cup team has to go through that at some point to become a Stanley Cup team. I think back to Tampa blowing that series against Columbus. You don't get back-to-back Stanley Cups and then a third appearance in the Stanley Cup without it. Vegas. You don't get a Vegas Cup if they don't run to the final against Washington and lose it. You don't get Florida if they don't go to Vegas and lose.
No.
So, again, this is just going to be the first taste of it for this core for Montreal. Second for some of them who were around in the bubble year that went to the Cup final with Tampa. For me, I think this is a great step in the right direction. Ironically enough, Money Puck has the Slavkovsky-Suzuki-Caulfield line as their third most efficient behind Heinemann, Evans, and Joel Armia. Hmm. And then their top line is Gallagher, Dvorak, and Anderson, who is at a very good 56.2% expected goals clip, and they're under 20 expected goals against. Their expected goals against per 60 minutes is 2.32, and their expected goals for is 2.98. That is a very good ratio that you would like to have on both ends of the ice. That means that you've got a spine in the middle of your roster that you can rely on to play 200-foot hockey. Not a lot of teams have that in their middle six.
For a long time, too. Yeah. Yeah. So I do have a couple questions for you guys. It's actually time to play another little game because I love playing little games.
I love my treats.
I'm gonna give since we were talking about that Habs first line. I'm gonna give you a line and you tell me, is the Habs line better or worse? Okay.
Okay.
Lou, you're first.
Okay.
All right. Verhaeghe, Barkov, and Reinhart.
I mean, Verhaeghe, Barkov, Reinhart. I think Barkov is one of the best players in the NHL. I love Barkov so much. I don't think there's a single player on the Montreal line that's anywhere close to how good Alexander Barkov is.
You agree, James?
I 100% agree. I think Barkov.
And that's Reinhart's amazing. Reinhart's one of the best goal scorers in the league, too. Yeah. I don't want to throw shade on Reinhart. Like that's I love Barkov a lot, and Reinhart's great too.
Yeah, I don't think that there is a player as good as Barkov at what Barkov does in the entire National Hockey League. Yeah. I think, you know, Verhaeghe's a 50-point guy. Sam Reinhart's a consistent 30-goal scorer now. I got to go with Florida there.
Okay. How about you on this one, James? Holloway, Schenn, Kyrou.
Ooh. You know what? These two, I like you went there because I think the Blues and Habs are kind of mirror images of each other. The Blues kind of just went on some random heaters at the end of the year and kind of put it together.
Yeah.
Certainly that line has more experience than the Montreal one does, but I think on raw talent alone, I'm going to go with Montreal here.
I think that's fair.
And but I think a couple years down the line, there's going to be a massive distance between those two teams.
Kyrou's a great goal scorer, always kills the Rangers. Schenn is underrated, but I think echoing James, there is an upside, a talent level to that Montreal line that maybe they're not as polished as the St. Louis line.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were asking me, like, hey, which one do you want?
That's what I'm asking.
Give me the Montreal line. Okay. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Okay. Ooh, he's excited.
Fogel, Deneau, Trevor Moore.
I know why you got excited.
Wait,
now.
What do you think, Nick? Who are you going with?
Such an underrated line.
I'm sure.
So underrated. Okay, no. I'll be more fair. That's kind of a joke. Fiala, Byfield, and I guess they change it around. who they want to have there.
Whoever you want on there. Whatever makes it interesting.
Lafreniere, obviously.
Man, Byfield's really come into his own.
Kevin Fiala's the
and
man.
Fiala has been the man for a while.
And then Laferriere to round it out.
Is this for both this of us?
And this
really,
has been a breakout year
this is
for
really,
Laferriere.
Really tough. I'm on the fence right now.
This will be the last
I think
one
my,
before we
I think on. My gut still says Habs.
Oh.
But okay. It's... I don't know. I really like Byfield's game. And again, like Fiala, I feel like I don't see him enough because he's out on the West Coast. But Fiala year to year is such a consistent producer.
What a goal scorer.
Oh, he's great. I mean, again, there's like, if you were building around a team, you take the Habs line because they're younger. Relatively, all three of them are really young.
Hey,
but
Laferriere and Byfield.
That's true. I mean, Laferriere,
like
but
24.
Yeah, that's fair. You still have nice youth and talent on the Kings line too.
I think I'm going with LA, purely because the numbers agree with me there.
Oh, that's fair.
They have Fiala, Byfield, Laferriere, 16th in the league, and the top Montreal line according to these numbers, like I mentioned, is Dvorak, Gallagher, Anderson. They're not until 35th. And then, ironically enough, 36th is Kuzmenko, Kopitar, Kempe. And then Fogel to know more right after.
Dude,
37.
Kuz has been crazy since joining this team. It's been nuts to watch. Okay, well, that'll do it for our little
fun.
Game segment.
That was really fun.
I'm glad
I
we
enjoyed
did that.
That.
It's a fun little game segment. Let's talk about what was not a fun little game.
Okay.
And that was the Rangers and Islanders game, which Grace McCarron and Lydia Perner did a great job covering.
Shout
they
out
did
to
a
them.
Fantastic job all year, so shout out to them. Wow, this was one of the games of all time. The Rangers complete the season sweep of the New York Islanders in just grand fashion is the only way to put it, just pouring on the goals. The Islanders have now lost 8 of 10. If, as we mentioned earlier in the show, for both of these teams, if Montreal gets at least 1 point tonight against Ottawa, everything is over, the world comes crashing down, and you wait for the draft lottery.
Hmm.
This was a heck of a game from the New York Rangers. Many people are asking, where has that been? This was not a heck of a game for the New York Islanders. Anders Lee just said we played like horse manure.
I'm sure that's verbatim.
That's very funny because after the loss Wednesday to the Flyers, it was an 8-5 loss for the Rangers. Adam Fox in the locker room said it is a bleepy feeling right now. So that's funny that just a day later, similar quote from the Islanders
similar
locker
room. Similar quote from the Islanders.
These teams are in similar positions, unfortunately.
They are. To add insult to injury,
let's do it.
Patrick Waugh just destroyed a 23-year-old kid's heart.
I was going to ask you about this. This is the biggest story from this game, because I'll come right out and say it. This game does not matter.
No.
Nothing in this game really matters all that much.
Season sweep.
Except for, well, to add on to the season sweep, tweet from Andrew Gross of Newsday, Rangers outscored the Islanders 23-5. Across four games this season. Tough look for your boys. No, the biggest story is what Patrick Waugh did to his rookie goaltender.
It's so messed up. For anyone who doesn't know, poor Tristan Lennox in his NHL debut. Sorry, he's not 23. He's 22. Mere months older than I am. And I would have been bawling my eyes out if this happened to me. He gets put in for the Hog. And that's what I call him.
Marcus Hogberg.
That's what they call Hogberg. They call him the Hog.
That's a good
the Hog was not doing too hot.
No.
So he pulls the Hog. Lennox gets scored on the second shot that he faces.
You tell me he pulled out the Hog.
I was about to say he pulled out the Hog.
No. He pulled out the Hog. And
I think I know we're calling this episode.
And anyway, he's like, "All right, Lennox, you're in." Lennox gets scored on. In what really wasn't his fault, but the poor kid. And then Waugh's like, "Oh, this is a bad spot for him to be in for his NHL debut. I'm pulling the Hog back out, and I'm putting him back in the net." And Jesus, man, poor kid.
I'm going to make a comparison that I think you actually will remember because we're sickos. Do you remember Oswald Peraza's MLB debut? He pinch hit in the ninth inning. I think the Yankees were getting blown out by seven. Maybe it was against the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
And he struck out swinging. That was his major league debut. And in my mind, I went, well, that's not how you give someone a prospect that you care about. That's not how you let them make their pro debut.
Right.
Pinch hitting in the ninth inning.
That's what they did to J.C. Ascara just last week.
You know, that's different, though. He's not a highly rated prospect.
Okay.
Oswald Peraza was supposed to be and still could be a guy. Okay. Yankee talk, not for here. it's just not the ideal way that you would want to make your NHL debut, but whatever, you get thrown in the game, you're getting blown out in the third period, and then you get pulled after facing two shots. And I understand, because I went back and I watched the WA postgame presser.
He apologized.
And also, as a goaltender, you know, he was going through what he was battling in his mind, and he said, you know, I wanted to give him a chance, and then he goes out there and he lets up a goal in the first few shots. He doesn't look that good, and I'm like, well, we really haven't given this kid any time to warm up, any time to practice with us. Yeah. I just felt like we are throwing him into the fire, and it's unfair to him if I keep him in there. I don't want to destroy his confidence. It's one of those decisions where once you make it,
you gotta
the cat's out of the bag, the wind's out of the bag. You are damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because there's another side to that where if they leave Lennox out there and he's, for whatever reason, not ready and the Rangers score five more goals on eight shots, that could be devastating for his confidence in the rest of his NHL career.
Right.
It's also pretty devastating to only face two shots, get pulled back in, and that's a weird spot for the Hog to be in
as
well.
That is a weird spot where
he thinks his day is done, and all of a sudden it's like, you got to get back out there and face some more shots.
That only ever happened to me once.
It's a bad situation for all parties involved.
It's rare in youth hockey, let alone in the NHL.
I know, once.
Yeah. Continue, Lucy.
So I was wrapping up my point with once you rip the Band-Aid off, you really can't slap it back on. Mm. Part of me really understands where Wall is coming from, where if he didn't believe that the kid was ready and he really thought, if I leave him out there, one of the things I thought was actually a very valid point, and it was more an indictment of the Islanders defensively than it was of Lennox, is he said, you know, all the chances we're giving up, it's not even strength. It's like, it's 2-on-1s, it's 3-on-2s. Like, we're letting up a lot of really high danger chances because we're not playing well defensively.
That
is kind of an unfair. Ranger fans complain about all the time that Shesterkin faces more high danger chances and more odd man rushes than any other goaltender in the league. And then fans get upset when some of those goals go in. That, to some extent, it is an unfair situation to put a rookie goaltender making his NHL debut in. So I understand the impulse to go, ooh, I made a mistake, I have to take him out of here before this thing spirals.
Right.
The problem is that once you make that decision, once you renege on that decision, it becomes this big whirlwind. Like, it's something that Lennox is going to get asked about. It's something that you're going to have to answer questions for in the post-game presser. You know, this is a 9-2 win, and I think this is the biggest story coming out of that game.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, hey, both of these teams, as you mentioned, they're playing out the string. The Rangers have the Hurricanes tomorrow. They have the Panthers on Monday and the Tampa Bay Lightning on Thursday. Hey, maybe you can play a little spoiler for, like, winning the Atlantic division.
Because I got a little annoyed. People were like, you know, where was this all season long? They put up 9 goals on the Islanders. Nick, you tell me if I'm out of line.
What?
I think this is way more a reflection of how bad the Islanders are than
it is
that the Rangers did anything good.
Of course it is. This is a team that has given up.
So did the Rangers. I thought the Rangers had given up as
well.
It's tough. The Rangers give more spurts of energy and effort that they kind of go, oh, are they back? No, they're not really.
Yeah.
I think the Islanders very clearly have flatlined.
They have. Ever since one of your top forwards who you signed to be a spark plug for this team calls it quits before the end of the season, it's not a good look. So, you know, Anthony Duclair taking time off to reflect. Dude, you play out the string, you be a hockey player, you know.
I'd like to talk with you about this.
Yeah.
I'd seen some discourse online moving forward about Lou and Wah. I think the general consensus is everyone wants Lou far, far away from this team, and they want his son far, far away from the Bridgeport Islanders.
Oh, that's,
But I've seen a lot of people now. I think the fan base seems to be, from my viewings of the online discourse, is that they seem to be split on whether or not they keep Wah. I saw some people saying, well, you know, bring in a new GM and let him decide whether or not he wants to keep Wah. I'm curious where you're at on your experience with him as coach, because I mean, like, it was rocky in Colorado. It did not end on good terms. So, you know, this is a first time thing.
No, it's interesting because he gets hired and people are overjoyed.
It's a big name. And it's an exciting personality.
Right. And he's replacing the least exciting coach to ever coach a professional hockey team in Lane Lambert.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. But hey, he's finding some success behind the bench in Toronto right now. So hats off to you, Lane. Wah, you run into an issue because Barzal loves him. Barzal loves Patrick Wah, and you have to keep that in mind, unfortunately. It seems like he has a fire lit under his butt. You know, going out, he'll talk in the locker room about how he's fired up to play for his coach, which is certainly something you want. That said, yeah, the Duclair situation, not great. You know, after saying I thought he was garbage tonight, or, you know, whatever he said.
Those are the quotes that make you lose a locker room.
It is. It's quotes like that, and it's, you know, pulling the goalie with 8 minutes to go. These are moves that are hard to explain to people.
You know,
and,
like, yeah,
you know, these are moves that get you fired.
I'm not critiquing the decision to fire Gerard Gallant. He didn't handle players well. Gerard Gallant, in some part, got fired for a lot less. Like, yeah, he was not great with any of the young players, especially Kako and Lafreniere. But at least in the media, it never got bad like that. And I know Duclair is a veteran, so it's a little bit of different territory, but there were a lot of players, including Artemi Panarin, that did not enjoy playing for Gerard Gallant.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that's come out about that. At least with the media, his quotes about his players, there were some things he said that were clearly shots at players.
Yep.
It was never as direct and as blatant as what Wah said about Anthony Duclair.
Yep.
Unfortunately, a lot of times, like, you hear stuff like that, usually means you're on the way out. Like, what Tortorella said when he basically said, like, this is not a team I want to be coaching, and then it turned out he was not going to be coaching that team. They agreed to part ways.
He's
a
like,
day later.
I don't know how to coach a team that's not going into the playoffs.
You know,
sorry.
So, you know, you start to hear stuff from a coach that, and I know alarm bells go off for me, especially because, like, I think Wah can be a coach of a successful Islanders team. I like the fact that he, excuse my language, but kind of a hard ass.
Yeah.
I think that's still, there's still very much a place for that.
Absolutely.
In hockey. And I think there's something valid to the point that has he been given a team that really can contend? At best, you're talking about an Islanders team that clearly has top end talent, but just doesn't have
the defensive
depth. The whole picture.
Yeah.
The whole picture is far from being there.
No, it is.
And, you know, goalie whisperer, you know, with a team that has Ilya Sorokin, I think can be valuable as well. So I think there's a world where you entertain Patrick Wah being here down the stretch. But, you know, it just feels like losing builds up, man. And that's true of any sport where it might not be your fault. I think about San Jose, and I'm forgetting the name of their coach, but right now, before they drafted Celebrini, or I forget the timeline was, but no, I don't think the San Jose Sharks head coach's fault last year that San Jose was as bad as they were.
No, of course not.
It wasn't. No one. Oh,
It was David Quinn. But also the talent level of these two teams are not close to each other.
Like, you know, there are a lot of situations where coaches get fired and you go, all right, well, it really wasn't their fault. They went into a situation that had a lot going against them. But the reality of the business is sometimes if your win-loss record doesn't reflect the way that the franchise wants it, at a certain point you're going to be shown the door.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what you worry about with Patrick Wah is how much losing can the Islanders take where it's not even that, hey, you're the worst coach in the world or you're a bad coach, but we just need to go in a different direction. We need something new.
We can all agree, though, that the team, like you said, it's not a finished product.
Yes.
It doesn't have a complete picture. Now, the person who's in charge of ensuring that the picture is complete is not Patrick Waugh. And while it may be very clear that, you know, fans and maybe some stakeholders alike want him gone, what are the odds that Lou Lamoriello isn't there in the future?
I'd say low. I think he's entrenched here, and, to be honest.
And, yeah. So it feels like we're going down the same path that the Islanders have been on for the past 5 or so years now, really, where it's the same, yeah, same sort of vibe, where it's like maybe they sneak in into a wild card and maybe win a series, but that kind of feels like they're ceiling with this group, unless they're going to make some big splashes. But I mean, I love Lou Lamoriello. I often come on here to defend him.
Yeah.
I'm not going to defend him now and say that he's the guy to make that happen.
Look,
regardless of the coach.
Four cups is nothing to sneeze at, but also, you know, he's 82 years old, so yeah, I think I could win a cup in that amount of time as a GM. But I'm just kidding. but you're right, because he did make some moves that are difficult to explain to people when you don't make the playoffs. You signed Pierre Engvall to a 7-year contract. You gotta, you know.
Is that a winner?
Hey, he had an excellent end to the season. All right. Pierre Engvall is having a heck of a March. Yeah, that's what
Engvall
they say.
Madness.
That March Pierre Engvall, you gotta watch out for him.
Gotta watch out.
That March Pierre Engvall.
Everyone's talking about
him. He sneaks up on you. He's been playing
in many
so
ways
hard
it is.
Recently. Yeah, dude, you have an 82-year-old guy who's gonna fire the head coach. After the season, unfortunately, I think this is what we're looking at.
Who would you like if they do go that route as a potential replacement?
Gerard Gallant?
No. Jay Woodcroft. I think it'd be interesting.
What's Bruce Boudreau doing?
Can we just get Torts in here and just set it all ablaze?
Do you want Torts to kill himself?
How more old school could you get? Lou in the front office and Torts behind the bench.
We can't have Torts. He's going to the Rangers.
Bring it back?
He's ours.
Well, hey,
I don't know.
That would make it exciting, though.
Speaking of the Rangers,
yeah,
you know, what is there to say other than...
I've got something we could talk about.
Sure.
Rangers have scratched Gabe Perreault the last two games. I think
okay.
That's something we can talk
sure.
about.
Sure. So why aren't you playing the young sure. guys if you're not in a playoff spot?
I'm trying to figure that out. There are people that are more mad about it than I am. I agree with the sentiment of there is a lot that you can learn from the bench or from up in the rafters.
Yep.
You get scratched a game.
You just want to hang out with him, don't you?
That'd be cool. I know. I understand the sentiment of let's give him a game. Let's watch it. It's not something I would personally do because you're not making the playoffs. So I think just let Perreault play and figure it out. And he has a whole offseason to watch film.
Yeah.
And be able to observe what good teams, and you know what? Maybe let's have him watch teams that aren't the Rangers this year.
Yeah.
You know, let's have him watch, ooh, gosh, what are the Colorado Avalanche doing this year? Let's right. have him watch them. What are the Capitals doing this year?
Right.
I just don't, I think we've lost the plot here.
Okay.
To be completely frank, I know that Laviolette didn't really have a say in whether or not the Rangers decided to start the clock on Perreault. And to a certain extent, neither did Chris Drury, because the Rangers are not in a position to stronghold their best prospect, really their highest chance of making an NHL impact prospect. If Gabe Perreault wants to come and play in the NHL and play a handful of games this year because that's what Gabe Perreault wants to do, you're going to let Gabe Perreault
yeah,
do that.
You've got him for 3 years.
It just feels like there's a little bit of a disconnect where it's like, all right, he's here, he played a few games, and now, all right, he's scratched, he's up in the rafters, and it's, we're not making the playoffs.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. How many games were left in the season when he came over? Like 10, maybe?
Maybe 10. It was like 9 or 10. I don't know the exact number. He's been scratched the last two games.
Right,
yeah.
They have 4 left, so they scratched him with 6 left. I believe he played 3 games, so I believe that's 9.
So do you think that it's like they thought maybe outside playoffs chance?
That's what
you
I'm
don't
want to
play
it
the
has
kid.
To be that. It has to be that. Because I'm starting to think, when BC season's done, the Rangers have 10, 11 games left, however it may be, what was their playoff percentage at that point? So it was in probably the 20s, 30s at max, right? Like they weren't maybe even that close to making the playoffs. They had a shot. Maybe they thought that Perreault would be the straw that broke the camel's back, and they leapfrogged the Canadiens and Blue Jackets somehow. But for me, it's starting to feel like, look, yes, you let your top prospect take control of his own future. You don't want to upset him. But I mean, you just shaved a year off an ELC contract, and you're only going to health bomb the guy.
Yeah, I mean, like that. Starting the contract now, I'm not going to blame Drury about, because again, I think that was a Gabe Perreault and his agent decision. Gabe Perreault, the college, the BC got knocked out, and Gabe Perreault said, I want to go play in the NHL. And Chris Drury, again, does not have a lot of leverage to say no and piss off his highest rated prospect. You do not want a Cutter Gauthier situation. Mm-hmm. You can't afford that. Listen, burning the ELCA, that's a Gabe decision, and it is what it is. I'm sure the Rangers didn't prefer that, but you're going to cater a little bit to your top guy. I don't understand, A, if the administration really believed that Gabe Perreault getting called up was going to be the jolt that was going to get the Rangers into the playoffs, then there's massive issues with what's going on in the Rangers front office. I don't think that's what they believed. But it feels like there's a little bit of a disconnect here between Laviolette and the front office. And I don't think that Laviolette is trying to spite Chris Drury because he knows he's on the way out. I just think Peter Laviolette knows that there's nothing he can do at this point to save his job. I think it's done. He's going to be gone.
Right.
And I think he's still trying to make decisions that he can defend so that he can get a job next year and then hang his hat on and go, I'm going to lean on experience or whatever. But it's weird. Like, you scratch Offen and Perreault and you put in Juuso Parsonen in and you return Brett Berard to the lineup. And
it's a playoff lineup right
there. Berard's been pretty good. Like, I would like to be playing Berard every day. That's not my issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we need to be playing Juuso Parsonen every day. Or at all. It feels like we're on varying levels. I understood the move to bring in Parsonen, and there were some exciting highlights there, and there was some exciting potential of, all right, a guy that can play wing and center, let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
It really hasn't looked that good. I would rather see Offen, Perreault, Berard play consistently down the stretch. It just feels like it's a whole mess. And I don't think that it's going to be something that Perreault's not going to ask for a trade at the end of the season. I don't think these two games make or break his development, so it's not like the sky is falling. It's just a little confusing because in a season that, especially down the stretch of the last four games, again, you have a 0.3% chance of making the playoffs. You need a scenario where you win all four games, including a game against the Panthers, and Montreal can't get a point.
Yeah.
That's not happening. Why not? My point is just, why not? Why not play Perreault? What are you going to get hurt by playing Gabe Perreault?
Missing the 0.3% chance, obviously.
You know? So,
I
don't know. I'm actually less riled up about it than most Rangers fans are.
Well, that's good. You're a cool guy.
I am. I'm a pretty chill guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just kind of wanted to see. I wanted to get the full taste of Gabe Perreault. Same with Offman. Like, I just wanted to
see what he's about.
I just want to see them. I already have a pretty good idea of, like, all right, like they don't look like they're necessarily NHL ready yet. I think Berard of the three of them is probably the closest to being NHL ready. But, like, if this was a playoff contender, I don't think any of them would really, really be playing consistently.
Right.
But they're not a playoff contender, so it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. Can we do a little thought exercise
real
quick?
Please, I love thought exercises.
Let's close our eyes. Okay, imagine you're on an NHL team.
Mm.
Take your pick.
Mm.
And you're scoring a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd goes wild. Yes, yes, yeah. Well, they don't necessarily do that. But now imagine scoring 895 of them.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
That's a lot of goals.
That's a lot of goals, and that's what Alex Ovechkin just did last weekend. That is the most in NHL history.
I could have done it faster. Could have done it a lot faster.
Oh, so much faster.
So much faster. So he scored a bigly amount of goals.
Bigly.
He beat Wayne Gretzky's record, who will still and
my
probably
biggest fan.
forever hold the points record. But Ovechkin's got the goals record. He did it on Long Island. I was there. It's one of those, you know, where were you moments. And I'm proud to say I was at UBS Arena thanks to the lovely WFUV Sports. I don't feel like there's a whole lot to, I don't know, news-wise, no. There's not a lot to say. But just give me your thoughts on Alex Ovechkin as a hockey player. I think that's a good question.
He's unreal.
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest goal scorers we will ever see in our lives. That's not breaking new ground. This season was just so crazy.
Broke his leg.
But not only that, like, think about last year. Like, he was so bad for most of last year, and it really got to a point where it was like...
It was March Madness.
He's not going to catch Gretzky. We started like age finally got him. At age 38, it finally caught up to Alex Ovechkin. And then out of nowhere, like, the last 30 games of the season, he turned it on. Yeah. It was like, oh, that looks like the OV that, like, we've seen the last 5 years or so. Comes shot out of a cannon this year, breaks his leg, and I've got Nick Palmer on 5-3 saying, he's not going to get it this year. Comes back from the injury and is scoring virtually every single game.
He's Hattie watch like every night.
He's unreal. I'll let Burley say his piece, but there's a lot of conversations we can have about special things that the NHL could and maybe should do for Alex Ovechkin's when he retires.
Mm-hmm. I'll bring up the one negative that I will associate with this conversation.
He loves Putin.
Yeah, it's part of it.
Okay, well, there's several negatives. I will bring up one of the negatives.
Nah.
And that is, this has invited all sorts of conspiracy theories about Alex Ovechkin's ability to recover from that leg injury so fast, and people have pointed PEDs. To his goal totals within the years of Olympic eligibility as perhaps a reason to pinpoint steroid usage on the likes of Alex Ovechkin. And I'm here to say, one, we don't care. Mm-hmm. And two, you're just basic baseless accusations. But, I mean, I've been having conversations with a lot of hockey fans who are 100% convinced one way or the other that Ovechkin has roided out in order to achieve this. But, like, a pill doesn't score goals. And, like, it's not like baseball where it's just, like, all you know, swing mechanics and you just straight muscle. You can muscle a ball past.
That is kind of what Ovi does, though.
But what I'm thinking about, let's think about it. This guy stands on top of the zone. Nothing new for his entire career. He stands on top of the circle, waits for the pass across, and just claps it. It's not like he has the hardest shot in the NHL history.
No, that's true.
No, he's all about precision, and he doesn't get enough credit for this. He is a finesse type of player in an age where finesse looks very differently in hockey. He's not you know, Crosby's edge work. He's not Nikita Kucherov's hands, but he is a jack of all trades where he will, you know, if you get into a fight with Ovechkin, you're going to get dropped. Yeah. If you get into a race with Ovechkin, you might beat him at this point in his career, but for most of his career, you wouldn't. His hands are up there with most of the best. His shooting ability is unmatched in NHL history. We know that now for certain. So even if this guy was doing what all you folks who have never gotten off the couch and can barely even skate, if he was doing all he said he was, it wouldn't matter really. At least not to me. So I'll put that to rest. And for another, Lou, you're absolutely right. We were, I don't know, maybe halfway through the 2023-24 season, and it started to feel like, I don't know how many seasons Ovechkin has left, let alone whether or not is he going to catch the 895 or 894. He's made it 895 now. And then he had the end of the season he had, and it started to feel like, all right, give him 2 years.
Yeah,
he'll be another 30-goal scorer, and then early 2025-26, he'll get it. He'll retire at the end of that season. And now I'm not so sure, and he's going to retire a year from now. He could go on to
he could
two,
get close
he,
to
three
1,000.
More seasons and push 1,000.
He could
if
get close.
He wanted to. I'm convinced he could do it.
He did say that, and you know what? I think that will be ultimately part of Ovechkin's legacy, because he did say that once his contract is over, he plans to go back to the KHL. So I think that's the conclusion of next season, right? His contract's up. Not this year, but next year. That would be really cool if he has another good year next year. And he finishes
with 40 like, plus goals.
Like,
and he's at 940 something.
He gets to 940 something, and we could go, if he played two more years, he could have got 1,000. And that will be the conversation is, you know, like, kind of like, going to go back to baseball, like David Ortiz went out on top as a,
right.
I think he led the league in multiple offensive categories. He was an MVP, and he goes out on top. Definitely had more seasons than him. He said, I'm done. That, I think, is how Ovechkin's career can end, is him riding into the sunset going, hey, I had more left in the tank. I probably could have gotten to 1,000. I'm going to take it back to Russia. We're going to go back home, and I'm going to let all you guys talk about how many goals could Ovi have gotten. It's pretty cool.
Because you don't want to try for 1,000 and then fail.
And then fail. Yeah, it's embarrassing. I always better to go out on top with grace than to go out with a whimper. The one thing with the PEDs, and again, we have to remind everyone, like, there's no proof that Alex Ovechkin did PEDs. So it is 100% a baseless conversation.
A lot of it is just Russiagate here.
Yeah. There's the thing that I think gets lost in PED conversations in general, because I'm a big, like, Barry Bonds. Hey, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of players that have taken PEDs. There's only one player that ever played the game, like Barry Bonds.
Mm-hmm.
The one argument I will hear is that PEDs help players stay healthy, help players recover, and a lot of times, the ability to stay on the field when you're chasing records is as important as how dominant you are and how good of an athlete you are when you are playing. I mean, we've seen this story countless times. I'm a baseball fan, so I think, like, how good would Ryan Howard have been if he didn't have injuries that derailed his career?
David Wright.
Mike Trout.
You can do this with any athlete in any sport. So part of the Alexander Ovechkin, it felt like he never got hurt. He was always available. He always played. And he was always dominant. So it will really sting if something conclusive comes out. And I feel weird talking about this because it's just baseless claims of people that are trying to tear down what is a awesome accomplishment. If something does come out, it will sting because I think the longevity that Ovechkin had is part of this. But you could not have found a better duo to carry you out of the 2004-2005 lockout that the NHL suffered than Crosby and Ovechkin. And one of the things we've started to see online is, wouldn't it be awesome if they waived the waiting period that you usually have to do to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and as soon as they both retire, boom, there you go. Give them the Gretzky treatment. Give them Mario treatment.
Yeah.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
It would be deserved, too.
I think it is deserved. Like, let's be straight up. Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin are, I would say, the two players that really define the 2000s on of the NHL.
100%.
And they are two of the greatest players of all time.
100%. Not only were they, like, coming up at the same time, like, it's, like, for lack of a better comparison, I'm going to bring it back to another sport that I know very closely, and I think maybe you guys know now where I'm going.
This Ronaldo is Messi?
Very much a Messi-Ronaldo type of situation, where, I mean, and I think it's, like, it almost shapes up too nicely, because Crosby is, like, this sort of magician that can do anything. You know, he feels like Messi to me. Ronaldo has more goals than Messi. Ovechkin's got more goals than Crosby. But I think most people can agree the more well-rounded, the more successful player has been Crosby, been Messi. It is quite literally a perfect comparison.
It is.
That's great.
And I think, spot on. I think it's a beautiful testament to what the NHL has been, at least for our entire childhoods.
And how awesome is it that he does it all with one team? It was something that got brought up to me, or I saw on social media, was, and it came from an account that was trying to attack and tear down LeBron. I'm not a LeBron hater, but the comparison was, oh, look at LeBron when he broke the scoring record. He celebrates by himself. Look at Ovi when he celebrates. It's with the whole team. I think part of the cool thing when Ovechkin gets to break this record is that all 895 came with the Capitals. I think, you know, you lose a little something with the LeBron scoring record that he's on the Lakers, and how many teammates of him are with him on the court that can really say that they've been through it all with him? It's no one, you know? Yes, a lot of Ovechkin's all-time teammates, not around him, but, like, Backstrom, his back gave out on him. Holtby, he's retired.
Yeah.
But you still have players on this Capitals team, like John Carlson,
Tom Wilson,
that have been there through ups and downs with him. You know, TJ Oshie is still around and is still close to the veteran. You still have a lot of players, a lot of franchise players, that it becomes a celebration for the Washington Capitals. And I'm not a Capitals fan, but like that's a really cool moment for a franchise. One of the cool things as Yankee fans was getting to have the celebrations for Jeter and Mo. And the cool thing was that they had spent their whole careers with the Yankees. And so like that's part of this. As great as Gretzky was, he's tied to four different franchises. Like, Ovechkin's tied to one. That's a really cool thing.
That is
cool. I think that's an underrated part of
it. It's an Ichiro-esque celebration. Like that, like for the Mariners when they, you know, had their big moment. Like, he's like their guy, you know. We should wrap it up, but I want to heat things back up here because we just had a really sweet moment. We got a big game tonight. Perhaps the last game that could mean something for a playoff race. We've got the Wild and Flames playing tonight in what is a really, really big game. The Wild, 79 games played, 93 points. Behind them is St. Louis with 80 games played, also 93 points. Calgary's at 88, but they have a game in hand on Minnesota, 2 on the Blues. Calgary's been playing pretty well recently. I think that there's a chance. I think Money Puck has them at about 15%. To make the playoffs. And I really like the way Calgary's playing right now. I think Dustin Wolf is a revelation. I played hockey with him once. Because he was he played in California. But I like the way that the Flames play hockey, and it would be exciting, I think, to have them in the playoffs.
I think they can catch St. Louis. I think like the games at hand really helps.
I know St. Louis is really hot right now. But
Calgary.
Imagine something happens to Minnesota.
I'm saying if you win two games, you are at 92 points and St. Louis is at 93 with two games left to play. And the spotlight's going to be on. I think I'd be shocked if Minnesota falls out.
I will say this.
But that's interesting.
Minnesota's on the road in Western Canada. It's not as much of a big deal when a team who's already in, you know, the Midwest of the United States makes the trip to Western Canada as much as it is for the teams on our little corner of the hockey world. But I will say, tonight they got to go to Calgary, and then tomorrow they got to go to Vancouver. They're playing a back-to-back. That makes it, one, a difficult situation. We've already saw the ovation that another hockey great of the 2000, Marc-Andre Fleury, got at what might be his last home game. In the NHL, probably will be, although they do have one more home game against the Ducks. I imagine that's going to go to Gustafson.
Imagine the Ducks end Minnesota's season. That would be so funny.
Well, think about it. Fleury's going to either play, I imagine tonight will be Gustafson, and then tomorrow will be Fleury.
Sure.
You know, like, that's a two massive games for the Wild to have to be mentally prepared for in the span of 24 hours. For Calgary, I mean, it's not easy, but like it's a win and it's a survive and advance type thing. They're playing in a playoff game. This is a win or go home type of game. If you're the Calgary Flames, the Wild maybe don't feel as much pressure because they've got two games in the span of 24 hours.
Yeah,
I love Calgary to come in and make this interesting.
Would that be good for the league.
Would be a lot of fun.
Feel like there's a lot of drama with postseason race again.
Not in the East.
The Rangers and the Islanders fell out too. Like I felt like everyone in the East sold, including like Detroit sold, the Rangers sold, the Islanders sold. I feel bad for the Blue Jackets. Like the Blue Jackets whimpered out, and it like if Montreal doesn't get it, it will be a failure of colossal proportions. But you have this fun wild card race in the West with three legit teams that could still switch in or out seeding wise or jump one another to actually get in.
Yep.
Calgary to me is so interesting because when's the last time we saw a team make the playoffs with the second fewest goals in the league? Second fewest goals scored. They're second to last in the NHL in goals scored per game.
All their goal scorers leave. That's what happens. Chucky left.
But you have a goaltender,
Johnny,
in Dustin
left.
Wolf.
Rest in peace.
That is going to be maybe not a top three finisher for the Calder, but he'll be top five and he'll get votes. and he's really impressed. And I think it's lended some merit to the Calgary's decision to part ways with Markstrom and give that spotlight, give that position to Dustin Wolf and say, here's a great position, here's a great opportunity to develop and shine.
Yeah.
I think they can be fun and spunky. I don't think they go far. But that's part of the fun of the playoffs is seeing the teams that you don't really feel like deserve to be there just get in and make things interesting. I'd like to see Minnesota stay in. I think Kaprizov is primetime television.
Yes.
Especially, you know, like, I think Minnesota would be a lot safer spot if Kaprizov doesn't miss half the season. I mean, no duh. Like, you could say that about any team if they lose their best goal scorer, but I think especially a team like Kaprizov, to me, is one of the best goal scorers in the NHL. That, yeah, you take a player of that
great
caliber
edges
off of any team, they are going to struggle. Healthy Kaprizov, I think Minnesota can advance in the playoffs. I'd rather see Calgary than St. Louis. I think St. Louis is the better team, but I'd rather see Calgary.
You know, Eminem says they forgot about Dre. I think they forgot about Hoobs because Jonathan Huberdeau had a bad year last year, but has really come back this year and looked good. You know, he's not scoring the goals that...
I mean, to be frank, no one in Calgary is.
No one in Calgary is, but... I like Connor Zary. I think he's a good kid that's coming up. Coronado as well. I don't know. I think before we leave, we should do a prediction for the game tonight. Minnesota and Calgary. You're not getting this on any other show. Let's get a prediction, James. Who's winning?
Well, let me confirm who the starting goaltenders are. It is Gustafsson and Wolf.
Yep.
Oh,
prime
a good
time.
Matchup.
That's heavyweight matchup of the year, really. I want to say Calgary, but I do think Minnesota will win tonight and then give St. Louis an opportunity to finish in front of them because I think they'll lose tomorrow to Vancouver. And I know that's crazy because the Canucks are not exactly, you know, the creme de la creme in the NHL at the moment, but
yes.
I think coming off of a hard-fought game, like, I think this is going to be a tight game, contested in the corners and the neutral zone, going to be really tight. I'll go for Minnesota tonight, kind of end the Cinderella story that is the Calgary Flames, but I do think the Blues will finish in front of them in the wild card because I don't like Minnesota against Vancouver tomorrow.
No, this is truly the battle for who doesn't want to play the Jets.
Yeah.
And no one wants to play the Jets. You'd much rather play the Vegas Golden Knights if you're a wild card team. So.
What? Would you?
Yes.
I mean, we've been here before in the playoffs. This Jets team has never been this good, and Vegas has never been, you know, they're a first place, but they've never
but
been.
Vegas has looked better in past years.
That's what I'm saying. I still wouldn't want to get Vegas in the playoffs.
They've got a little Florida Tampa in them.
Do they?
Yeah, just like it's Vegas. So? It's Vegas, man. They're always around. I'm always wary of Vegas. I don't like. To me, it doesn't matter how they look like going into the playoffs. It's the Vegas Golden Knights.
Mine's Edmonton.
Bro, Edmonton were right there. I mean, Edmonton.
Every year, though, they are scary in the playoffs.
Hey, it's McDavid, Draisaitl.
I know. Not this year, though, because the Kings have home ice against them. I need not remind you of the Kings' home ice record.
You don't need to. That's correct.
Excellent. I think that'll do it for us, then.
Yeah, why not?
Woo! Thanks, everyone, for listening, and thank you guys for being here. We moved around, and...
physically.
You know who else moved around a lot? The Hog. That was a crazy game for him.
He gets around.
He gets around. The Hog gets around. Thanks, everyone, for listening. 90.7 WFUV. Playoffs soon. See you then.